This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan. Today, we're broadcasting live from the Fawcett Center on the campus of Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio. President Bush takes the oath of office tomorrow in Washington, D.C., and most political analysts say he has Ohio to thank for his second term. We're here today in part because Ohio proved to be the decisive battleground, but also because this state's electorate matched the nation almost issue for issue. If Ohioans split 51-49 on the question of who would make a better leader, for example, then the nation divided almost exactly the same. And as you look at the numbers, Ohio best reflects our divisions. Election campaigns accentuate differences, of course. Yesterday, we spoke with people here in Columbus to see if things have changed 3 months later.
I think there's a financial divide in the country more than a candidate divide, maybe. I think the haves and the have-nots have a huge gulf between them.
In a sense of urgency or something, you know, everybody unites pretty well. But other than that, there's divisions, and I guess there should be, you know.
My best friend, he's a Republican. As a matter of fact, he is going to the inauguration ball. We battle all the time about Bush. There's still a lot of tension.
I stood in line voting day for 2 hours with an openly gay man who was voting for John Kerry. He knew I was voting for George Bush, and we ended up making friends and going out and having lunch afterwards. So I hope people can kind of take that attitude and just kind of look at each other on an individual basis.
The voices of Ohio residents Julie Milligan, Glenn Marshall, Terry Reed, and Tamara Teal speaking with us from a mall in the Columbus suburbs. Tomorrow in Washington, everyone expects the president to call for unity. But after such a bitter election, how do you move forward? Is it time for the winners to reach out, or is compromise a cop-out? Is it time for those who lost in November to look for the middle ground or dig in their heels? Which issues can you let go? Which are worth the fight? Join the conversation. Our number here in Columbus is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. We also have microphones here in the audience at the Fawcett Center, and we'll be getting questions from the audience here as well. Our first guest this hour is Andrew Caton. He's a professor of history at Miami University in Oxford, Ohio, the author of Ohio, The History of a People, and thanks very much for being with us today at the Fawcett Center.
Thank you, Neil.
What is it about Ohio that makes it so closely reflect the nation?
Well, Ohio historically has been a collection of people from all over the world and all over the North American continent. Ohio reflects the enormous diversity of American society. And one of the challenges historically for the past two centuries in Ohio has been for people who are so different in ethnicity and religion and race and other areas to find some way to come together and talk to each other.
As you look at the state of Ohio, it really is made up of several different regions that are quite distinct.
Right. I mean, most people refer to Ohio as a collection of four quadrants with Columbus in the middle. And some people think Columbus has very little to do with any of the four quadrants. Basically, there's the northeastern quadrant of Ohio, which traditionally in the 20th century has been a very democratic area, particularly strong with labor unions, which is much more like the northeast.
Dominated by the city of Cleveland.
Correct, and Youngstown, Akron, and others. And the northwestern part of Ohio, which is much more of a kind of a plains area, midwestern prairie area. Southeastern Ohio, which is an Appalachian area with large numbers of people in mining and other operations there. And then southwestern Ohio, the Cincinnati-Dayton area, which is an area that in many ways has much more in common with the Upper South than it does with the rest of of Ohio.
Now, what are the issues? We all remember the election, of course, but what are the issues that had particular traction, as they say, here in Ohio?
Well, I think the tension in the election was between social issues and economic issues. Ohio is a state that has suffered perhaps more than most economically over the last generation, in part because of major changes in the economy, which reflect changes in the global economy as well. But then there are also the social issues. And traditionally in Ohio, Democrats tend to do better with the economic issues, and Republicans tend to do a little bit better with the cultural issues, reflecting the kinds of demographic divides that exist in the state.
Now, obviously, we saw these issues play out in the election. when we're not campaigning, where do you see these issues playing out?
Well, I mean, the way Ohio, like many states in the United States and like many democracies in general, has tried to deal with this is in the creation of public space. That was one of the great efforts of the 19th and early 20th century, was the leaders of Ohio recognized that people were going to disagree with each other, and they realized that one of the important things in a democratic society was to allow people to disagree with each other, but also find some way to exchange information and ideas. And they did this by consciously, in the late 19th and early 20th century, using government, particularly local government, to create institutions and space. Every small town, for example, in the early 20th century, had what was called an opera house or a city hall, in which the people were supposed to gather as a town and talk about issues. And this would also be reflected in the state house building, in institutions such as libraries, higher education, schools, churches, and other things. And the idea was that if you could bring the people together to speak respectfully to each other and exchange information and ideas, they would find some way to get along with each other.
Well, one obvious place where people of differing minds come together is, as you mentioned, in government. C.J. Prentice is a Democrat, Senate Minority Leader in a majority Republican Ohio legislature, and that may sound familiar if those of us who've looked at the way the government is organized these days in Washington, D.C. C.J., thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Democrats are the minority here in Ohio, just as they are in Washington, D.C. Are you seeing Republicans reaching out, or is reaching out at this point your job?
I think that my goal, frankly, and that of for the betterment of participation that we just talked about, is to really end the one-party rule that we have in the state. It's almost sinful to have decisions made in a vacuum, behind closed doors, not allowing public participation. But I would hope that we would find some common ground, and that common ground for me would be in the three basic areas in terms of developing our human capital, and that would be jobs, education, and health care. Mm-hmm. We just lost within the last 4 years about 250,000 jobs in this state, and I'd like to really turn the moral debate on its heels and talk about the immorality of people working at minimum wage and 40-hour week and only bringing in $10,000 a year. It's when I look at that whole package, it's about figuring out how we pay that livable wage, but also it's immoral to not have people in this state without health care. Mm-hmm. We're looking at 1 million folks in this state that do not have health care. I'm reminded almost daily of the Moyer program, where you had those people waiting in that food line right down in Marietta, Ohio. And we have 1 in 5 babies in this state who go to bed hungry. So I would hope that those middle ground issues, education, I mean, what we're looking at now, 50% of those levies that were on the ballot in November failed.
Tax levies.
And that's just not in Appalachia, mm-hmm. Ohio, or in Cleveland or the inner cities, but it was around the state in our middle income communities. And what we're faced with now, the immorality here, is that we've got sometimes 35 babies in a classroom with a teacher trying mm-hmm. to reach them.
Well, we're trying to find out from everybody, from our listeners, from our audience, you know, where do you talk with people? Where is it that you meet with people of differing minds? From what I'm hearing you discussing about the state legislature, words like shut out, and I'm hearing also, a lot of campaign rhetoric, it sounds like to me.
Well, I think it's incumbent upon the Democrats to craft a message that's clear. We've got to have a message that Joe Sixpack and what's the coffee gang? That mom that sits around the coffee table and is able to articulate what are Democrat principles. This whole debate on the No Child Left Behind language, or that little slogan, and when we're looking at school districts that are begging for additional resources. So we've got to be clever in crafting those messages so that it begins to resonate with our constituents so they know the difference between a Democrat and a Republican.
Let's get a listener involved in the conversation. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Our email address is totn@npr.org. We're going to begin with a listener here in the Fawcett Center, Karen.
Hi, I'm Karen Gagel. I am from Dublin, Ohio. And I think Americans in the red and the blue states, we can talk to each other. My question is, how do we get the Congress and the president to listen, and not the agenda of politicians or the lobbyists? I've written the president myself, and I got a form letter back, and I'm not sure he really heard what I was trying to say in my letter.
Senator, how do you get politicians to you're not represented in Washington?
I'd like to first of all say that so much of what happens in Washington comes back to the state for either decisions to be made or implemented. And so I would suggest that you start your effort in how to change this system by working with right here in the state of Ohio as opposed to in addition to Washington. I think you have to localize it. I must get thousands of pieces of letter, you know, on some kind of campaign or something. And really one of the things outside of counting those letters and my staff letting me know, hey, this is really a hot issue, I'm interested in what my people that I represent are telling me.
Excuse me. I just wanted to get Andrew Caton very quickly. I mean, there seems to be, there used to be a period of governance after an election before we went back into the campaign. Are those days forever over?
I don't think they're necessarily forever over, but I think we're living in a very different world than we were a century ago, and one of the things that we have to do is adjust to that new world. For better or worse, people simply don't have the kind of faith in the public space and public institutions that I talked about earlier. And also, I think increasingly American society in general is fragmented, so that people don't really spend that much time talking to people with whom they're different, even in churches or schools are sort of the last bastion of that.
And we'll be moving on to that part the conversation in just a few minutes after we take a short break. We're talking about today's political climate, and we want to know what it's like where you live. Is it more battleground or middle ground? I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan. We're broadcasting live from the Fawcett Center on the campus of Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio today. Our hosts are WOSU AM and the Columbus Metropolitan Club. We're talking about political difference and political common ground and what it's like where you live. Please call us and email us with stories about where you see common ground being reached, where it's being reached, or where conversations are not happening. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And places of worship can either attract like-minded people or become ground zero for many of the moral issues that can divide people. The Reverend Gregory Stover is Cincinnati District Superintendent for the United Methodist Church. He joins us here at the Fawcett Center. Thanks very much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Good to be here, Neil.
Like many other churches, United Methodists are struggling with issues like gay rights, gay clergy. Are these issues dividing congregations, or are people trying to find common ground?
In general, I would say that the issues less severely divide congregations because congregations do tend to attract persons who have similar points of view. The place that the divide is seen more strongly is across larger units of the church, districts, annual conferences, the church in general. Although I would want to be quick to say that I believe particularly in mainline denominations like the United Methodist Church, even within congregations, we can tend to attract perhaps a broader kind of diversity than you might find in some churches. I know during the recent election within the area that I serve, there were congregations that experienced some small levels of conflict between members and pastors about particular points of view that were expressed, particularly around gay rights, since those issues were on the ballot in Ohio with the constitutional amendment, and they were very much in the forefront in Cincinnati, where there was an effort to repeal a charter amendment having to do with gay rights.
And so when these do play out on the larger stage, again, are people being adamant on their position, or is compromise the goal?
I think that what we're experiencing at this time is that there are persons across the church from various positions that are highly adamant about their position. Their understandings grow out of deeply held values in their lives, and it's very difficult for them to let go of those or to envision compromise on particularly some of the more hot-button issues. We have been making attempts across the United Methodist Church, however, and in other denominations where I'm aware, that to create spaces in which there can be conversation and we can explore why those values are held, how they're held, and what we hold in common.
Let's get another question from the audience here at the Fawcett Center. You, sir?
Tom Vogel, Bexley, a suburb of Columbus, Ohio. To Professor Caton, beg your pardon. Why specifically did President Bush carry southeastern Ohio with a greater percentage than in year 2000? The economic problems there, as you know, are great.
Well, I think southeastern Ohio traditionally has been a more conservative area than the rest of the state. Actually, in the 19th century, it was a more democratic area because the Democratic Party was more conservative. But in the 20th century, it's traditionally gone, particularly Cincinnati and Hamilton County, for Republican candidates. And indeed, one of the ways in Ohio that you run successfully in Ohio is it used to be to run a Democrat from southwestern Ohio and or a Republican from northeastern Ohio. But I think one of the social issues were particularly powerful with people in rural areas and also in the new suburbs that are developing around Cincinnati. A lot of people, frankly, who are moving into Ohio, who are coming into Ohio into a kind of ex-urban middle class, working in industries and high-tech things around the city of Cincinnati. And many of them find companionship and find community in church and in sharing values. They're looking for people who are like them, looking for things that they can share with other people. And I think an issue like gay rights, for example, as powerful as that is for many people, is also a symbolic issue. It's a kind of a shorthand for saying, are you like me or not? Do you share my values or not? And I think one of the things we tend to neglect is the degree to which Americans moving around, people moving into new areas, are actively looking for people that they can get along with. Unfortunately, as was mentioned earlier, I think all of us in American society today simply don't spend much time with people that we disagree with.
Senator, let me ask you about that. You have to spend time with people you disagree with, whether you like it or not.
That's exactly right.
It goes vice versa.
Sure,
they have to
sure.
spend time with you.
Absolutely.
And whether they need your vote or not, and in this state they don't, you do have a voice in the legislature. Is it time, and I was trying to get to this idea, since they don't need you, is it time to find issues on which you can cooperate? Is it time to become adamant, as we're hearing from people in some religious communities?
I think that I have to walk a fine line, because as I gave a floor speech yesterday in terms of Dr. King's saying basically that he envisioned little black girls and little white girls holding hands and that famous speech, and we talked about on the floor of how we must cooperate with one another. But it's more than just holding hands and talking to each other. It's about getting significant legislation passed that is critical. It's about really being on the same page in terms of, are we going to deal with the revenues that we have right now, the shortfall of revenues? And are we going to have an honest discussion about that? Is there going to be, one of the things that I'm real clear on is that if you just have like minds in the room, you cannot come up with the best decisions. And so it is that jockeying back and forth, that pushing, wow, I'm going to be friends with you, CJ, mm-hmm. but I'm not going to let you in the room to get to participate with your ideas. That is why when the citizenry is cheated. I don't want this to be political pandering, but you got to hear that the citizenry is treated when in fact they go to the polls and elect about 3 million Ohioans are Democrats in terms of who we represent. And yet their voice is not at the table in terms of
Let's get a caller on the line. And joining us now is Monica. And Monica's calling from Burlington, Vermont.
Hi there.
Hi, Monica.
Thank you for taking my call.
Go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to say I lived in Cincinnati, and I have family and friends in Cleveland, and some still in Cincinnati. I definitely find myself on their liberal side of things. And when I try to have conversations with my friends and people that I know have differences of opinion, I find that it's really difficult getting to any kind of agreement because people just say the sound bites that they've heard in the media and the statements that have kind of been pre-created for us to all repeat over and over again. And it's really hard having an honest conversation with people before conversations are just shut down and sound bites are brought up again.
Greg Stover, let me ask you about that. Does that come up, pre-digested opinions, when some of the divisive issues come up in the church?
Certainly that's true. And I believe that one of the things that we have to do if we're going to find common ground, and I like the way CJ used the term common ground, but one of the things that we have to do is we have to create an environment where we can get beyond the slogans and get beyond the sound bites. We need to be able to create a situation in which there's an environment of trust that's created, that there's time taken, that we can hear the stories of people behind their values. One of the things that we find in the church, and I think that would be true across society, is that there's a good deal of stereotyping. If you disagree with someone, then you tend to put that person into a stereotypical view, and you have to move beyond that.
Mm-hmm. Let's get another question from the audience. Gentleman to my right.
Yes, I'm the Reverend Stephen Smith from Dublin, Ohio, and the word we have been dancing around, I think, with all of this is ideology, and what I want to know is how do we get beyond mere ideology, which shuns debate, after all, who needs debate when you know you're right, and move to some real dialogue.
Senator, do you know you're right?
Well, I'd like to take the challenge on and throw back at you, Reverend, Matthew 26. I'm steeped in now. Our president started off his opening remarks, our president of the Senate, with that he's going to act like and follow the principles of Jesus. And so Matthew 26 basically says, the disciples say to Jesus, but Jesus, I didn't feed you when you were hungry. But Jesus, I didn't clothe you when you were sick or were naked. I didn't go to the prison. And then Jesus responded, if you did this to the least of these, you have done it to me. So when we look at it, work in an environment, frankly, and I use the three G's of God's, guns, and gays, which was our legislative package last year, unfortunately. But when we work in that environment, and it is upheld that, in fact, if you did it to the least of these, then you have done it to me. Then there is no question that we must open that debate to look at the faces of these people that were in that hunger line.
Reverend, let me bring you back into the conversation. There are some people in church who think they know what's right.
I believe that's true. There are people in church that think they know what's right. I'd like to respond that I'm not sure that the issue is getting beyond ideology, because I'm not sure that's possible for any of us. There are values, there are ideologies that inform all of our decisions and who we are as human beings. But I think the issue is, are there ways that we can find where there are commonalities in our ideologies and begin to focus on those commonalities while we continue to deal with the place that there are the conflicts?
Public schools are another arena where differing values and interests get hammered out. Sandra Stroot is director of Ohio State University's College of Education's Office of Outreach and Engagement. She joins us here today at the Fawcett Center, and thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Neil.
What are the biggest issues you see dividing people here in Ohio regarding education, or to follow up on the question, where's the ideology?
It's interesting in education because I think we talk about where's the middle ground in Ohio, and I think it's more likely to occur in education because we are taught in public schools to value diversity. We respect difference, and we even try to incorporate student differences into our instruction to try to connect content and make it relevant to students' prior knowledge and cultural experiences. So that doesn't mean we're without debate, but I think we would be groups of people who would be more likely to try to find the middle ground. And if I can, I will give an example that is quite controversial, controversial example, and in the national news, and it has to do with what we do with Darwin's theory of evolution. You've heard in Dover, Pennsylvania, there are parents suing people right now because people are just beginning to enact intelligent design into the science curriculum there. They have to read a paper as they start to teach about Darwin's theory of evolution. In Georgia, the courts just ruled to remove all of the anti-evolution stickers on books. And here we are in Ohio trying to struggle with the same issues. But I think we've done it a little bit better. In 1992, we were struggling with the same issues, and we had to decide the science standards for 9th and 10th grade biology. We have a process in the state of Ohio when we have these conversations to invite people in with areas of expertise in the issues, and we have opportunities for public testimonials and public forums. Because of that, we had a group of people, specifically Stephen Meyer and Jonathan Wells from the Discovery Institute, when they were talking about what to do with Darwin's theory of evolution, they suggested that why don't we just teach the controversy? And the State Board of Education took that very seriously, so now our Ohio standards, we are asked to describe how the scientists continue to investigate and critically analyze aspects of evolutionary theory, and they specifically say in there that the specific intent is not to mandate the teaching or testing of intelligent design, but it opens a door without putting a requirement forward for those discussions to take place. So in that particular instance, I think it was a wonderful compromise for us to address those issues in our schools.
Sandra Stroot of Ohio State University, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I just want to follow up on that. This is an approach that we in the media have used from time to time. Well, we certainly don't want to do anything about pornography. Let's cover the debate over pornography, and we could still show a lot of dirty pictures. Isn't this ducking the issue?
I don't think it's ducking the issue, and I don't know that we'd go there with pornography because that's a totally different conversation.
It is.
But,
and one more appropriate for the media, perhaps.
I'll leave that to you. In the issue of when we're talking about something like Darwin's theory of evolution, there have been both scientific questions as well as the religious aspect of trying to look at something other than Darwin's theory. There have been holes in the scientific perspectives and scientific evidence of Darwin's theory. So I don't think that is ducking the issue. I think it's trying to understand what do we know in science as fact and what do we know as theory. And when is it appropriate to challenge theory when we are not completely consistent in the evidence that has been provided? Mm-hmm. And that's been the argument that's put forward here for students to be able to understand how knowledge is created and science is defined.
Let's get another caller on the line. And this is, if I'm pushing the right button, and I'm not. Now I am. Mike. And Mike is calling from Cincinnati.
Yes, I have a question for the professor. I was curious if, from his perspective, the division is worse now than, say, the last 50 years, or is it played out more in the media? And the second part of that question is, if it is worse now and that trend is becoming more deteriorating, wouldn't he ever see, or does the panel ever see, a time where the country would actually become ripped apart and become two countries, actually geographically and politically, where you would have a liberal and a conservative part of the two separate countries?
Andrew Cain.
I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks very much for the call.
Well, actually, that happened in the 19th century. There were two separate countries for about 4 years. No, I frankly don't think it's any worse than it ever has been. If you look again at the history of Ohio, like the history of the United States, the issue of slavery divided the nation in half, and you know, 600,000 people died over it. Issues of alcohol and temperance, issues that of women's suffrage that today many of us take for granted were hugely controversial in the 19th and early 20th century. The role of labor unions. And my point is simply that we have a rich history in the United States and in Ohio in particular of trying to find ways to deal with the earlier man's question about how do you believe something deeply and also get along with your fellow citizens. And the problem in Ohio, like the United States as a whole, is there are so many different people with sincerely held opinions. Ultimately, however, I mean, we can go to schools and we can sit in auditoriums and on radios and newspapers and we can talk about diversity, but ultimately, when Senator Prentice and others have to deal with power, It's very hard to compromise.
We'll be talking more about that when we get back from a short break. Our guests are, you just heard, Andrew Caton of the University of Miami University, also with us, State Senator C.J. Prentice, the Reverend Greg Stover, and Sandra Stroot. I'm Neil Conan, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan. And today's program is coming to you live from the Fawcett Center on the campus of Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio. Tomorrow at this hour, we'll be back in Washington, D.C. The president will have spoken, and the inaugural parade will be winding its way along Pennsylvania Avenue. Here on Talk of the Nation, we'll open our phone lines to give you the opportunity to react to the speech and to the other events of the day. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. Today, we're talking about political divisions and where we find common ground. And just before the break, we were talking about why it's so difficult to talk about these issues and that it is especially difficult when it comes down to issues of power. And State Senator Prentice, this is where you come into the conversation. You're more than most people affecting people's lives with the legislation that passes in
exactly.
that state house.
Exactly. Let me just say this, because you've been really asking, how do we get along?
Mm-hmm.
Bill and I are both very religious. And before we got sworn into office, we actually knelt down and said a prayer in terms of, let's see if we can really work this through. Now, having said that, we have, the Senate Democrats, or the Democrats in this state, the leadership, has a responsibility not only to be represented in terms of the numbers, but in terms of the views, things that Democrats have fought for so long. That common ground, we've got to make the governor, who with his Blue Ribbon Task Force on Student Success made as their number one priority of paying for investing in low-income children, high-risk school districts, seeing that tied to economic development in the state. Well, that can't be Mickey Mouse language. That's got to actually operationalize itself, be implemented. And we're right now faced with a $5 billion budget deficit, and we're looking at, okay, where do we spend the money? Are we going to cut off the senior citizens? Are we going to cut off their passport program? Where are we going to do that? So it is critical that after saying those prayers and saying that we're going to try to work together, it is critical that I have a strong position in terms of being let in the door.
Mm-hmm.
Being let in the door. But let's say that they continue their mantra. Then my mission is to make sure that when the 2006 election comes, that we end this insanity of this one-party rule.
Right. Let's get another member of the audience in our conversation, and we'll go to my right.
Hi, I'm Connie Long from Worthington, Ohio. Reverend Stover, I guess I'd direct this to you. Do you see any efforts by the United Methodist Church or any other mainline churches to offer dialogue and opportunities for the red churches to talk to the blue churches or to understand each other, or are we becoming red and blue people of faith?
I would say to you that just about any time we do any kind of dialogue and conversation, whether it's in a specific structured environment for that or if it's in the midst of ongoing decision-making within United Methodist Churches, we often have red and blue churches talking with each other. That's a part of the division that we experience, the struggles we experience, just like the larger society experiences it. And there was a second part to your question that I'm sorry I lost.
I wondered if we're destined to be red and blue people of faith, not only Christians.
I don't think that we are destined to be only red and blue people of faith. And I think one of the calls that we have, or one of the needs we have as Christian people, is to understand that within our own particular sphere, we are called together by something deeper, which is our faith, than even our political leanings.
Let's get a caller on the line. And this is Chantel, and Chantel's calling from Las Vegas.
Yes, hi, thank you. I do live in Las Vegas, which was a bit of a battleground state in Nevada, but when political territories are concerned, it has been said that there are two Nevadas, Las Vegas and the rest of the state. Las Vegas obviously being a little bit more of a liberal stronghold as opposed to even Reno, Nevada, that even despite its similarities to Las Vegas, is much more conservative, along with the majority of the rest of Nevada, which is very rural and very conservative. And that's even more confounding by the fact that prostitution is even legal outside of the city limits. And even a little more surprising is that the state was very red in election, with the exception of Las Vegas. We now have Senator Harry Reid coming out of Nevada as the minority leader. And now, even though I even have family up in Reno that is very Republican, and there was even lines drawn between our own family during this whole thing, which was very confounding.
And where do you find to talk? Is it around the dinner table? Where do you discuss these things, Chantel?
Well, it was particularly interesting at Thanksgiving, when people came to visit for Thanksgiving. And we found it particularly helpful to point out mistakes and where improvements could be made in our own parties. And that seemed to sort of humanize the whole thing, and didn't seem like anyone was superior or trying to lord over the other party. And when you do that, when you point out your own faults, it seems to make the other person less, I suppose it's a defensive, and you're more willing to listen to a more humanized party than someone that's trying to lord over you.
Sandra Stroud, let me ask you about that. That sounds a little bit like the approach you were talking about on some of the issues in the schools. Is that something where, if you're perhaps not putting people on the defensive immediately, that might achieve more compromise, more middle ground?
Yes, I think it's important that everyone's voice be heard, but we also have to remember that we're all striving to meet the same goal, and that is to provide a good place for children and education for children. So although everyone's voice has to be heard and we can incorporate their views as much as possible, we finally have to make a decision about what is best for the children in our schools.
Mm-hmm.
And it's no longer about my views. It's about what is best for the children in the schools.
You can get, and Chantel, by the way, thank you very much for the call, but you can get very divisive issues on what children are taught in schools. So, for example, sex education is a hot-button issue almost everywhere.
Sex education is very interesting, and you know, interestingly enough, sex education has been put on the back burner in some cases, because as we look at national and state policies in No Child Left Behind, the focus is on reading and math. And so areas such as sex education, such as childhood obesity, such as some of the issues we face in the communities, are the unintended consequences of policies such as No Child Left Behind.
Hmm.
So it's
well, there's one way to resolve the debate.
Well, it's not intentional. We would like to have those put back on the table. As a result, instead of educating the whole child, we're tending to educate only the parts of the child held accountable by national and state policy. And I think we... I think we need to revisit that issue.
Let's see if we can get another question from the audience.
Yes, Pete Deal from Columbus, Ohio. And I've been very heartened in my particular church, because I know of at least three groups, and there may be more, that are getting together talking about these issues. One, for instance, is dealing with American democracy, and also how we can talk better to each other. So my question to Reverend Stover and to Senator Prentice is, are you aware of similar things going on in other churches? We did hear, I think, earlier one.
Mm-hmm. Reverend, why don't you go first?
Yes, we have some groups that are doing those same sorts of things, sometimes by a very intentional intervention from the outside in terms of creating a dialogue around homosexuality. We did that across the Cincinnati area in several churches. We have other groups that spring up by themselves along the way. Moving the discussion a little bit, the church was very much involved in Cincinnati following the racial tension in 2001 in a neighbor-to-neighbor program, which brought diverse people together from the church and across the community to try to understand the needs and how we could move forward together.
Mm-hmm. Senator Prentice?
Those discussions have been going on, but I think the racial divide, if I can speak, just hitchhike on what was just mentioned, the racial divide in terms of segregated housing patterns while my church has participated clearly in the effort of bringing different racial groups together to talk, by the time people really get in their cars and go back home, well, what we say is that the church is the most segregated institution on a Sunday in terms of where pockets of people go. So I think there just needs to be more than probably just the discussion. I think it's got to be, there's got to be some stuff going on in the home that really begins to talk about the values of valuing every person that I think plays out clearly as an adult. These adult problems of homophobia or I'm right, you're wrong kind of stuff, I think the more people are exposed to something different, the more they tend to be able to have an aha.
Mm-hmm. Let me end this part of the discussion back where we began. Andrew Caton, do you see Ohio tilting? Do you see the divisions sharpening? Do you see the divide growing?
No, not necessarily. I mean, I think we're at a particularly acute place right now because of the election. But I think what you've heard here today reflects a lot of what you see in Ohio. I mean, I think we can overdo this red-blue stuff, actually. People are complicated human beings, and some people may be red on one issue and blue on the other. And we tend to polarize the whole thing as a kind of shorthand for talking about it. But I also think one of the things you see and one of the things that happens is that and I agree with Senator Prentice about this, that the more you get down from the abstract ideological issue and start talking about concrete people, for example, you'll hear people who are opposed to gay rights or who will say, but I know someone who's gay, and I, you know, he's a really nice person. The difficulty, the challenge is to live in a society in which we can all agree that people can have deeply felt opinions and reasonably come to different opinions. That's very, very hard to do. It's not just a matter of listening to each other. It's a matter of respecting the fact that somebody can legitimately disagree with you. I don't know that we've ever figured out exactly how to do that in Ohio, but the history of the state suggests that we're continuing to work on it.
Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have for on this topic. In just a moment, we'll hear from one of Ohio's most noted travel writers about one of some of the state's lesser-known places of interest. But first, I wanted to thank everybody on our panel today. Sandra Stroot, director of OSU's College of Education's Office of Outreach and Engagement. Reverend Gregory Stover, Cincinnati District Superintendent for the United Methodist Church. C.J. Prentice, Senate Minority Leader in the Ohio Legislature. And Andrew Caton, Professor of History at Miami University in Oxford and the author of Ohio, The History of a People. Thanks all very much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you.
And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.